Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for Thanksgiving, the 25th of November, 2021. Happy Thanksgiving. Brief intro time, and Bailey wants to say something. Hey, Bailey. That's not saying something. Just tell people happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, now try and say happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving!
Close enough. Quinn, say happy Thanksgiving.
My Hello Kitty toy is gone.
Good Lord. This is not the way we rehearsed it. Say happy Thanksgiving.
I'm scared to say it.
You're scared to say happy Thanksgiving? Why are you scared to say happy Thanksgiving?
Because I just want the Hello Kitty toy.
And that makes you scared?
Yeah, I miss it. I had it when I was younger.
Yeah, way back when you were so much younger than four. That was crazy times, huh?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have it now. My cousins take it.
Well, that stinks. Your cousins might have taken it, but you've got enough toys here that you could choke a small woodland creature, so I don't think you have anything to worry about, Bailey. You have anything to say as you chew on that baby doll?
I chew in the baby doll.
Tell everybody thanks for listening, and don't forget about the curse show.
I don't want to say it.
Bailey, how about you say thanks for listening and don't forget about the curse show Saturday?
Thank you for the curse Saturday.
All right, I suppose that is conveys what it. Anyway, it is Thursday. I don't really expect you guys to listen to this very long. Don't forget about the curse show on Saturday. Don't forget about ancientlifeoil.com, where you get the best CBD oil. Don't forget that my kids are destroying this room at my father's house. Because that's what they do. And the curse show, patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Don't forget to enter to win the signed copy of my book. This episode is a rerun. It is a best of. Who the hell is it from? Now I gotta look this up. Bailey, that's me. Mommy and Daddy had a picture of me up. I know it seems hard to believe, but it's true. We have Mark Morano. I'm Climate Depot. That's right. Mark Morano from Climate Depot about his new book at the time called Green Fraud. Yeah, there's ghosts running around here. His new book called Green Fraud. You can tell it's Thanksgiving, night before Thanksgiving. God, I remember a time when this meant I would go out and get absolutely hammered because this was allegedly the biggest bar night of the year. And now I'm getting hammered by a 4- and a 3-year-old. Never grow up, people. Never grow up. But do get into a trip to Fancoma. As a Detroiter, I apologize to everybody listening for the Lions. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll have another best of for you tomorrow. And the curse show at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast will be new on Friday. Without any further ado, I give you the Mark Morano show from like March. Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 26th of March, 2021. It's the Friday interview edition of the program. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Mark Morano, the grand poobah behind Climate Depot. If you don't know what Climate Depot is, you should definitely find out about it because it's the one-stop shop for information that rebuts, refutes, and calls out and points out the fraud that is the the left-wing environmental movement. It's climatedepot.com. Mark Morano has been running that thing. I believe he founded it. It is it's an invaluable resource, to be honest with you. So make sure to check that out. We're going to talk about his new book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. His last book, the bestseller, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. So you're going to want to check both of those out. Mark's a really smart guy. Joe Biden's press conference, I will address on Monday's show. I'll also address it on the Friday or the Saturday Curse Show at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast and all that. There's so much to curse about. Don't miss that. patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. So that's it. It's Friday. We made it to the weekend. Let us talk to Mark Morano, shall we? Also, a quick warning there, because of his setup, there is a bit of an echo sometimes when I speak. Unfortunately, Mark is the one you want to hear speak, so it might annoy you. Sorry about that, but you can hear it and you can make it out. So sorry. Here you go. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we're joined now via Skype, the miracle of Skype and social distancing, by the author of the great new book, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, Mark Morano. He is the proprietor of climatedepot.com, and he's described as a professional climate smearmonger by Michael Mann, not the director, the far less interesting but far more damaging professor at the University at Penn State. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Derek, for having me on. Looking forward to this.
I appreciate it, and congratulations on the book. It came out Tuesday. It's available now everywhere fine books are sold, at least for now. Before we get into the scam that is the Green New Deal and the danger that it poses, you are a threat, and this lets you know how you are a threat. This morning on social media, I began to see tweets about how they're coming after you to get your book banned from Amazon, which, as we recently learned, Amazon loves to ban books. It's a weird business model. We sell books, but we ban a lot of them. But they're coming after you. How did you find out that the mob was coming for you?
Well, I found out from the website Daily Kos of the progressive wacky activists. They have a thing called the Climate Denier Roundup, and they came straight for Amazon. And their premise is this: Amazon claims to be a climate champion. And so the liberal activists are just beside themselves that Amazon, who could call themselves a climate champion, are profiting off climate denial books. So they're taking direct aim at my book and anyone else who they deem a climate denier book, and they are going hard after Amazon. And as you mentioned, Amazon is starting to ban books. And this happened to me a few years ago on Facebook. I did a Daily Signal Heritage Foundation a Facebook video that ended up getting 10 million plus views. And UK Guardian climate activists went after Zuckerberg to say, how can you let climate deniers get their message out? And it was shortly after that they started the whole, you know, Facebook throttling down all the, you know, with the warning labels and all their restrictions and censorship. So it's not out of the realm here that Amazon could be heavily influenced by the liberal base going after them for selling Green Fraud, this book.
It really is amazing how if these people are so confident in their arguments and their facts, as I cough as I say that, they wouldn't want to silence the opposition. They would expose you, right? If your book and your website were just riddled with frauds and you were dripping with bloody black oil money and you were trying to kill the planet and in your spare time you threw on a top hat and twirled your mustache maniacally, they would easily expose you, but they don't. They want to silence you. That tells you something, does it not?
Yes, it's their first instinct. And, you know, and I go through the book and talk about how scientists are intimidated. And not only do they want to silence you, they want to erase you. One of the things in my book, I detail what happened to Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace. He was listed on Greenpeace's own website for decades, telling that he was a co-founder of the group, one of the founding members. He went on Fox and Friends a couple years ago now and railed against the Green New Deal and climate change being fake science. And President Trump tweeted out what Patrick Moore said. Well, It turns out the next day, Google erased Patrick Moore as a Greenpeace founder, and Google's websites erased him. And the media was going along with it until I found the Wayback Machine and was able to find it and screenshot that Greenpeace's own website had it. So they're not only trying to silence us now, they're trying to erase the past. That's how, you know, how much rewriting of history and suppression they want to do.
Well, that's not unique to the environmental movement. A large percentage of the left is very Soviet-esque, where they just kind of airbrushed people out of history, and it's as if they never even happened. Or at least they haven't gotten to the point where we're disappeared to, you know, to prison camps yet.
Yeah, right. That's that was the Commissar Vanish is a great book about Stalin, and you know, when certain officials of the state fell out of favor, they were airbrushed out of photos. And that's exactly what's happening here. That's exactly what happened to Patrick Moore, and it's exactly what they're trying to do now with the book. It's their first instinct is to suppress dissent, because the narrative and the party rule is all important. The same thing we're finding in COVID, and I have a whole thing on that in the book, Derek. It's identical. I have a COVID apes the climate debate. Everything from top epidemiologists being uninvited to scientific conferences because they don't support lockdowns. And I'm talking about Stanford University epidemiologists, the top of their field. The same thing in the climate world where they're being deplatformed happens in COVID. You're being censored, banned. You're losing your job. You're being decertified. And I go through all of that. It's eerily, the similarities are eerie between the COVID world and the climate world in terms of how everything has to be on message and any dissent is crushed.
Well, you can tell a lot about somebody about how they respond or interact with people who disagree with them. And if somebody believes in what they're saying and has the facts on their side, they don't silence their opposition. The left does. Let's start with COVID and climate, because during COVID, I've seen, I don't even know how many stories, sort of lauding the air in this in City X is so much cleaner than it's ever been. Well, yeah, because nobody's been driving anywhere. And look, it's the canals in Venice. You can see all the garbage at the bottom of it. It's so wonderful and clean. And in many ways, it's a utopic view of a pandemic and of economic destruction, which actually is what the Green New Deal wants. So it's kind of like a mini test run, at least for some of the results for what's going on here. You can, yeah, you can have the canals of Venice nice and clean, and you might see some fish down there, but nobody's working. You know, nobody can buy fish. So that's kind of what the environmentalism movement wants.
Yeah, in fact, I have two chapters in the book on this COVID climate connection. And the first one mentions and goes into great detail about how jealous climate activists are of COVID, to the point where actress Jane Fonda actually says COVID is God's gift to the left. Okay. And what they mean by that, I have activists after activists, from John Kerry to Al Gore to Greta Thunberg to Teen Vogue columnists to United Nations officials, all praising the lockdowns and saying it's the same solution that we've been advocating for. You know, they'll say things like, well, if we can lock down the world for a virus, we can do the same for a climate emergency. And I go, and it's amazing, because everything that the lockdowns achieved is what the goals of the climate activists are. And I go through and I show you, for decades, they've called for degrowth movement, for planned recessions to fight global warming. And voila, what is a lockdown but a planned recession? And they brag about the 7% drop in global emissions of carbon dioxide. And now they're saying, they're so excited, the UK Guardian came out about maybe a month ago now, and they're saying we need a lockdown every 2 years in order to meet the United Nations climate goals. That's all we need to do. Look at how simple. We finally figured it out.
Well, what's amazing to me is they don't really care about the human cost. And they're pretty blatant about that, which is shocking. And it's tough. It's like trying to sell somebody a car and tell them, by the way, if it's a Pinto, by the way, if you get rear-ended, you're probably going to blow up and die a horrible fiery death. Like, that's, wait a second, you had me. Plush leather interior, you had me, then the fiery death, you kind of lost me. But that's that sells, yet they even admit that the solutions, quote unquote, that they put forward, we'll get into the problem that the Green New Deal doesn't actually address environmentalism at all in a second. But John Kerry, the horse-faced former Secretary of State and now the climate envoy or whatever the hell he's doing, admitted that even if we adhere to all of the things that are proposed out there, the United States, if we reduced our emissions to zero, it wouldn't do anything. So to the world climate, it wouldn't matter in the terms of CO2 emissions. So basically, he's advocating for something that he himself admits isn't going to make a damn bit of difference.
Yeah. And Kerry, I mean, it's weird. He admits this all the time. He's done it several times a year almost. And he keeps saying even if the United States zeroed out, it wouldn't impact climate. It wouldn't even impact global CO2 emissions. He talks about the futility of it all. He's definitely off message. I don't even know if you know why, how he gets away with it, but he does. And this is, it's weird because he gets right to the heart of it. If we actually faced a climate emergency, and we don't, I have a whole chapter in there on the latest science on carbon dioxide, on extreme weather, on polar bears. I mean, there's, and I actually use UN data. But even if we faced a climate emergency, which we don't, we would all be doomed if we had to rely on the Green New Deal and the UN Paris Agreement. And then I go even further and say, if we actually faced it, you'd want to do the exact opposite of what the Green New Deal wants. You would not want top-down, centralized control of every aspect of your life. You would want a free market technology innovation approach that would tackle this, and it's like we've had in the United States. This is a, there's a reason under the Trump administration that carbon dioxide fell. We were leading the world in carbon dioxide emissions without even trying. We were doing better than all the arrogant European signatories, the UN Paris Agreement. Trump is a climate denier. As we, our emissions dropped significantly as theirs continue to rise. This is the issue of the thing. So it's the exact opposite solution. You would want free markets, free minds, technological innovation, energy renaissance. The last thing you would want are politicians banning energy that's proven itself 80%+, trying to mandate that less than 4% of our energy production, solar and wind, somehow expand radically in the next 10 or 15 years to meet net zero United Nations goals. It's just, it turns the face on science, in economics, environment, technology, common sense. And that's what the whole book is. I have 15 chapters that lays out this case. And if you still support the Green New Deal after this, well, then you get a John Kerry star for admitting the whole thing is futile anyway.
You can fly on his private jet with him. But Mark Moreno, if we really were being honest with, if the environmentalists really were being honest and they wanted renewable, clean, renewable energies, the answer does exist. It's not wind because the wind doesn't always blow. It's not the sun because the sun doesn't always shine. It is nuclear largely. And I, you know, Michael Schellenberger has been on this show. He's somebody you know and you write about in your book. If the environmental movement really were about the environment, and if it really were about reducing CO2 emissions, we have the solution. Yet they oppose that vehemently, and they use things like the movie The China Syndrome or the Fukushima nuclear disaster. Like, I don't know if building a nuclear power plant near someplace called the Triangle of Death or the Fire Triangle or whatever it's called of it is particularly a good idea, like, you know, build it on a fault line. But otherwise, the rest of the world has been using nuclear without incident. But they scaremonger that thing. They don't embrace the solution before their face. I have a theory, and you would know better than I, that the reason they're pushing towards wind and solar is because the people who are funding or investing in wind and solar are the people who are donating largely to campaigns, and wind and solar wouldn't exist in the state that it is without subsidies, and it can't exist going forward without mandates to use it. So you've got government on both ends holding guns to consumers' heads and involving them in this. When the solution to nuclear, it's certainly not cheap to build, but once you get it going, it's going to keep going. So why isn't the environmental movement embracing nuclear? And why is it, am I right in my conspiracy theory about why they do embrace wind and solar?
Well, the latter part is exactly right. On that point about wind and solar, I write extensively about Michael Moore in the book. And his film,
a heretic now, too.
A heretic. And all, I mean, he is a progressive in good standing on every single issue except one: so-called renewable, in reality, unreliable energy, solar and wind power. He's a global warming alarmist. He believes there's overpopulation. He wants to have radical reductions in population. He sounds like Paul Ehrlich. But he does not buy the solar and wind. And he hates the, quote, crony capitalism of the solar and wind issue, which is exactly what you laid out, Derek. So there's a what Michael Moore did is a great scene in the film, and I write about it in the book, where they have Richard Branson sitting with Al Gore. And I think it's one of these renewable energy.
The film is Planet of Humans, right?
Yeah, Planet of the Humans. And I say in the book that that Michael Moore was exiled from the planet of the progressives after he did this film. But he's got a great scene in the film, which he got. It was some renewable energy conference, and they're asked on stage, you know, is Al Gore a prophet? The reporter asks Richard Branson, with Al Gore sitting next to him. And Richard Branson starts to chuckle and says, it depends on how you spell the word prophet. And everyone has a big belly laugh, but Michael Moore uses it as a devastating moment in the movie, because it's all about them on this machine of getting money from fossil fuel companies, from, you know, renewable energy, all to do the mandates and subsidies. Al Gore himself, when President Obama was elected, his companies that he had written about his PowerPoint and presented and featured in his film and books, they got up to $4 billion from the green stimulus that Obama did. It pays to have friends in high places. It pays to be a former vice president, which is how he was on his way to be the quest for the world's first carbon billionaire. So Michael Moore, for his trouble, Michael Mann, who Mark Stein writes, who Mark Stein did the whole book on the hockey stick, a disgrace.
He's sued
science.
By him too, has he not?
He got sued, and it's still in the lawsuit. It looks like it's going Mark Stein's way, but he did the book, The Disgrace of the Profession. Well, Michael Mann and Josh Fox, Hollywood activist, anti-fracking activist, teamed up, and they got the distributor to try to censor the film. They got YouTube to boot the film for a time. Michael Moore was in shock, and it was just incredible. You cannot dissent, and it doesn't matter how much you agree on all the other issues. So Michael Moore probably lays it out the best. And in terms of nuclear, you're absolutely right. I think it was Freakonomics, the New York Times writers, who had the best summation. If you're actually worried about global warming, then you can blame Jane Fonda, because it was the China syndrome that scared the public and politicians so much that no new nuclear plant was built after that. But it just makes no sense, because you have to be anti-science to be opposed to nuclear energy. Luckily, we still can continue to our existing plants, and I believe there's actually for the first time more coming online now shortly. But the existing plants have become even more efficient over time. Nuclear is a big part. Countries like France have embraced it. But in America, I just don't expect it, you know, to catch on any more than it already is in existence in any significant way, because of that fear factor. I mean, you just can't get past that, and we haven't been able to in the last 40 years.
I mean, I grew up with don't stand too close to the microwave. You're going to die. Right. So radiation scares the hell out of everybody.
Just
part of it. Because in movies, it makes people into monsters. But, Mark, there are a lot of other things that, through the miracle of capitalism, have been developed, like fracking to get us more natural gas than we know what to do with. That clean burning natural gas, it is, again, another one of those solutions that, if you were genuinely concerned and only concerned with CO2 emissions and therefore the fate of the entire planet, you would embrace that. But no matter what the free market comes up with, these people are opposed to it, which leads me to speculate that maybe, just maybe, there, and I know where we're going with this, but I'm just setting the ball on the tee for you. Maybe, just maybe, the environmental movement is not a big fan of capitalism and the free market.
Well, you know, that is the crux of this whole argument. We have Green New Deal architects admitting it's not a climate thing. This is a change the whole economy thing.
Jacques Rabardi, who was AOC's chief of staff, said that literally almost word for word.
Yes, and other architects of the Green New Deal openly call that. And we also have people like Naomi Klein of Canada, who wrote, you know, capitalism versus the climate. Capitalism is not compatible with a livable climate. So there, in the United Nations official, you know, Edenhofer years ago talked about we will redistribute wealth by climate policy. This is not about environmental policy. I mean, the United Nations, we have the former UN chief admit, we seek a centralized transformation that will make life on planet Earth very different. That is what it's about. So I go in the book and I lay out that whole case. And then you look at what they originally came out with in the Green New Deal. It had nothing to do with climate. Free healthcare for all. It had free college for all. People who didn't want to work, you know, would still get paid. It went through environmental justice, identity politics. They are
we were told that was just a draft, and it was mistakenly released. Like, if at any point in the process, I didn't believe them, but if at any point in the process that stuff is involved, it shows a lack of seriousness.
It does. And even though it wasn't like the farting cows was in there, it was, you know, how should we say, inelegantly worded, but still it was still the thrust of the Green New Deal, which was all basically a complete social and cultural revolutionary change of America. Everything from your home appliances to your home energy use to your thermostat to your cars. We had people like Andrew Yang, a big Green New Deal proponent who's now running for mayor of New York City, proposed that we abolish private car ownership, get rid of the internal combustion engine, and instead have roving fleets of electric cars available for rental to the public. Elizabeth Warren doesn't want any new homes built unless they're carbon neutral. And we have other academics following suit on that by saying that we should abolish private home ownership. They want to crowd everyone in cities. They want us to do mass transit, which, by the way, is all now anti-COVID if you look at it, because all the green living, you know, the reusable bags and stuffing into cities and mass transit, people fled that once COVID hit. So that's a little oddity there. And even places that would never imagine, San Francisco and others, are bringing back plastic bags. You know, these were supposed to be the scourge of the earth. But anyway, it goes on. You know, our diet, the farting cows is funny, but it's a very real issue. You have former UN chief, climate chief, telling us that we need to treat meat eaters like we used to treat smokers, put them in the back of a restaurant in their own section, kick them outside. The UN climate chief and UK science chiefs are saying we need to make meat as expensive as possible. At the same time, they're promoting these vegetable oil-based processed fake meat burgers, which even CNN nutritionists say aren't healthy and much better off with lean meat than these fake oil derivative meats. The World Economic Forum wants us to print certain pounds of meat a minute from 3D printers. We have insect promotion.
Every time you turn on the computer, like, eating grasshoppers is just like eating a hamburger. Like, all right, well, then you eat grasshoppers, and that'll be more hamburger for us.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman's promoting insect. The United Nations promoting insect eating. The World Economic Forum's promoting a climate activist. So you see what they're trying to change. That. Then airline travel. What was the biggest thing before the lockdowns? Flight shaming. You know, you had Greta Thunberg. I don't know how I'm going to get to Europe. My favorite, and I quote in the book, is Tony Heller, a climate skeptic, said, Greta, he wrote an open letter to Greta. Greta, you wouldn't know this because you skip school, but there was these two brothers back in North Carolina who invented something called the airplane, and you can take that airplane and fly to Europe. And, you know, that's so we had flight shaming, and then the COVID lockdowns come, and then, of course, all flights essentially came to a standstill. The airline industries are reeling. And where are we now, Derek? We have a climate activist named Eric Holtice, who's, by the way, said he's getting a vasectomy to save the planet because he doesn't want to reproduce, and he spent time crying after reading UN
reports. I agree with him on that.
Yeah, there you go. But we now have climate activists telling us we can only fly under a climate emergency when it's morally justifiable. And, you know, you have Chuck Schumer urging President Biden last month to declare a national climate emergency so we can suspend elements of democracy and put him in charge of our economy, like the blue state Democrats who have, you know, ruled with an iron fist over COVID restrictions.
Well, there are pockets in this country and around the world that are, in particularly California, I think, that are implementing a lot of these restrictions and, you know, little petri dishes of progressivism. Are any Are any of them doing well? Because I don't, you know, California, we're reducing our CO2. Oh, wait, I'll finish this statement when the power comes back on. You know, that's the right. Roving blackouts. Like, is well, it yeah. working out anywhere?
Well, California started back in when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor. He did their big climate bill, and everyone praised him. The courage of the ball. He was taking bows. He was married to the Kennedys at the time. He was at the in crowd, and it was funny. At the time, I was working for Senator Inhofe, and we pointed out it's very easy for Schwarzenegger to take all this credit and all the, you know, all the media adulation because none of it kicked in yet. It was, you know, this was 16 years ago. But now we've seen the result, and we've seen the rolling blackouts. We've seen the skyrocketing energy costs, which harm minorities, poor, those on fixed income, senior citizens. We even had black ministers protesting Robert Redford at one point because Robert Redford supported policies that harm the black community. So, you know, there's people out there that are trying to topple this narrative, but we've seen what's happened in Europe, like California, skyrocketing energy costs, the UK power chief telling its citizens, power will only you can only have power when it's available. Get used to limited power, rolling blackouts. By the way, this is the dream of the progressive left. This is the dream of the Green New Deal architects because it limits emissions, it limits economic growth, and you have exactly what they wanted. John Holdren in the 70s said America's problems we had too much energy that was too cheap. And this is where we are. We had Obama's former energy secretary openly said we need European-style gas prices, which, by the way, if anyone's paying attention, be about a current doubling of our prices now, maybe even more, as you adjust for inflation, as you adjust for currency exchange. So they don't mind high energy costs because it keeps people, you know, limited economically, which is what they want. Remember, planned recessions and degrowth movements.
They always use an emotional appeal. It's, you know, you're going to kill the planet. It'll probably, they always, because we've had 30 plus years of 10 years, we're all going to die predictions. Yes. That didn't come to pass. If I'm a cult member and my cult leader is telling me on Monday, the world is coming to an end. On Tuesday, I'm going to have some questions for my cult member. But for some reason, for my cult leader, but for some reason, the environmental movement doesn't have that. Starting at the earliest example I found was 88 or 89, where they were promising us that the coastal cities were going to be underwater and we're going to slowly have to develop gills if we continue to live on this planet. So they've done something brilliant, in my mind, Mark, is they've ignore what they've said in the past. They've started making 100-year predictions because nobody alive yes. today is going to be alive when they don't come to pass. So they don't have to deal with it. It's unprovable, obviously, a 100-year prediction, but more importantly, it's undisprovable. And you can't have the undisprovable wild predictions about 100 years down the road get any traction in society without a compliant media. How much of a factor is the fact that the left has taken over the entirety of the media played in the successes of the environmentalist movement, in quotes?
Oh, it's been a huge factor. I'll get to that specifically, but let me just address your tipping point. In the book, I go back to 1864, and I find a man named Marsh, who's the first one I could find warning of a climate tipping point. He actually warns of climatic excess if we don't change our ways. So we can go back to the 19th century to show the climate tipping points began. But you're right. We had Prince Charles do a 100-month tipping point. It expired, and he actually did a countdown. And once it expired, he issued a new tipping point of 30 or 40 years into the future when he would be in his late 90s. They just have no shame. They continue to do that. My favorite on tipping points was Penn and Teller had a guy named Ross Gelbspan on, a climate activist, a journalist who used to, I think was the Boston Globe. They had him on making these ridiculous predictions, and then they showed a chart and they said, Ross Gelbspan was born in this year. His prediction of doom is this year. Where will Ross Gelbspan be when this prediction allegedly, we can verify if it comes true? Boom. And then they have equals dead and they put that on the screen. But it was the exact same thing you're saying. They learned from Paul Ehrlich, who was making 5-10 year predictions, and he had egg all over his face with all these overpopulation famine predictions. And so they learned, but they haven't learned that great. And in terms of the media, everything's changed since Donald Trump was elected. My first film came out, Climate Hustle 1, 2016. We had reviews in Variety. We had the Associated Press covering it. We had the New York Times. We had just mainstream media coverage. We were on Jimmy Kimmel. But then Donald Trump's elected, and the media takes it upon themselves that they'll never allow, you know, a conservative or anyone with those kind of similar views politically to have any real impact in their controlled media. So beginning 2016-17, it was a complete wipe out of climate skeptics in anywhere in the media. And I mean anywhere. There's no one. You can't have anyone on CNN, MSNBC, the three networks. You know, Scott Pelley, the old anchor, said, "I won't interview a climate skeptic denier any more than I would interview a Holocaust denier." The LA Times.
Chuck Todd said something very similar. They don't want to hear it. They've plugged their ears.
Yeah, and so what they've done is they've just silenced this completely. I mean, 8 years ago, you know, you could get skeptics on MSNBC, ABC News, CNN. We had primetime debates. I debated Bill Nye in primetime on Piers Morgan's show. That couldn't happen today. It's not even an option on any level. They would never put a climate skeptic on in any way, shape, or form. They would never even allow them on the TV. So it's really a sea change just since Donald Trump. And of course, yeah, I think you know that, but also just the whole social media. I mean, we're now being shut down across the spectrum. You can't even advertise. When we were doing our film last fall, we weren't even allowed, you know, our ads being throttled, my Twitter account losing followers. So they really do have a huge dominant control. And all we're left is preaching to the choir. We can no longer influence that mainstream. And I think that affects Republicans on Capitol Hill because they don't hear skepticism like they should. And so you have many timid Republicans now who just don't want to challenge the scientific claims at all on this, even though it's low-hanging fruit on many of these issues.
Well, Republicans have always been horrible at messaging. Your former boss, Jim Inhofe, was one of the few people who, as somebody, when I was doing health policy at the Heritage Foundation, there was one Senator Enzi and a couple of members of the House who were really serious and knowledgeable about health policy, and I would meet with them, their staff, all the time, whereas the rest of them, they'd want a 30,000-foot briefing because they didn't want to get into it. It's not their – they looked at it as a Democratic issue, and so they just kind of stayed away from it. The way that the left pollutes messaging in most things, and now it's happening in climate, and you touch on this in the piece too, is they find a way to insert race into everything. It's about racial justice. And if you say, well, this is a really bad policy, the response is, why do you hate black people? Why do you hate brown people? And like, this has to do with racial justice. It doesn't have anything to do with racial justice. Subsidizing, you know, Al Gore is not going to make anybody black's life better. But they couch it in that. How has the environmental movement managed to couch the Green New Deal and wrap it in the racial justice blanket?
Well, it's environmental justice. It's climate justice. And I have a whole chapter on this. This is, you know, relatively, you know, it's always been there in terms of the climate, but it's really come on, obviously, in the last year or so. We have Al Gore openly blaming climate change on white supremacy. I profile several leading NASA climate scientists who now blame essentially white supremacy on climate change. And the gist of it is this: our founding fathers were slave-owning racists who founded America, which was one of the key leaders of the Industrial Revolution, which created all this carbon dioxide emissions, which then created inequities and injustices, and black people suffered. And therefore, we need to right all these wrongs. We need climate reparations. This is what climate justice is about. So you have NASA scientists now. Everything is now tainted through the lens of identity politics. This is a huge, you can't underestimate how important this is now in the climate movement. But what's interesting is I go back and I show in the 19th century, Aborigines, indigenous people of Australia, blame the change of the climate and weather in Australia on the introduction of the white man in Australia. And I think this is like 1846 was this article that I found. And this is the kind of stuff, you know, whatever we think is new or wacky, you can always find a historical example of some other culture doing on the exact same thing, blaming race. And we have people like Bill McKibben, who says that global warming is caused by white American, because white Americans typically vote for denier politicians. So it's white America that's responsible for this. I mean, it just gets wackier and wackier. So I think people, if nothing else, you'll enjoy that chapter on identity politics.
Is there an idea that is too insane for them not to adapt in the mid-70s when the coming ice age was all the rage? The Newsweek article famous about that talked about covering the polar ice caps with ash to try to melt them because they thought they were advancing. Now Bill Gates is advancing something like seeding the clouds with ash or whatever to try and deflect some of the sun's rays out of it. First of all, people have God complexes, a lot of people. They seem to think that they can control the weather, or they all think they're Bond villains or something like that. But is there any kind of crazier ideas that people have advanced aside from communism that actually would do serious damage to the planet in the name of saving the planet like those?
Well, first of all, on the Bond villains, Klaus Schwab is a classic Bond villain. The man who called for CO2 budget for every man, woman, and child on the planet, Hans Schulenhuber, is another classic Bond victim. Bill Gates would be an odd Bond villain, but he's kind of, he's exactly the God complex you described. Well, what Bill Gates is proposing this, the idea of blocking out the sun and all this geoengineering of our environment, really weird stuff. There's also been cloud seeding. China, Russia have been involved in that, and they're claiming success on local regions, creating snowstorms. As you mentioned, the 1970s, putting black soot on the Arctic cap. I have an entire chapter that goes back. And this is shocking because in the 1970s, we thought that the fossil fuels were causing global cooling by creating aerosols, which were blocking out the sun, creating global dimming, and creating this dangerous global cooling, which at the time they were blaming on increased wars and floods and droughts and tornadoes and bad weather due to the cold weather. And they were even calling about tipping points. We had to act. The exact same solutions. I go through point by point of the 1970s. Every solution they proposed exactly mirrors the Green New Deal. It's a fascinating chapter to go
through. They have the solutions. They're just looking for a problem to piggyback it on. You can tell somebody's full of it when the problem that they're defining changes 180 degrees and their solutions are the exact same. When it went from global cooling to global warming, the solution stayed the same.
Yes, and the same with COVID, by the way. COVID is a virus outbreak, and the only solution was the most centralized control Americans have ever been subjected to. Now, I put the caveat in. It's obviously we had slavery, segregation, and we had Japanese internment camps. But in terms of general wide population government oppression, I don't think there's a historical precedent for the lockdowns. I mean, you had governors putting curfews and telling people you can only go out for justified reasons. You couldn't have people in your back deck, and you had neighbors empowered to snitch on you, and you could have your utilities cut off, and you couldn't have some interstate travel. It's just the list went on and on. And this is what the climate activists are praising, the lockdowns. This gives you a big clue of what's coming with the Green New Deal.
What do you think that the American public, the average person listening now who isn't necessarily in the weeds on this thing, what do you think they misunderstand the most about the modern environmental movement? Because, they're great at branding the name, the environmental movement. That means they don't want somebody driving buckets of mercury and dumping it into the drinking water supply. So, it sounds very innocuous, but it's not what they are. What do you think they misunderstand the most about them?
Well, I think what they understand and misunderstand, and I'm probably guilty of this. I plead guilty because I get into maybe too much of the policy and I get excited and go on. But they think a lot of the people who aren't supportive of the climate emergency narrative hate the environment, don't care about pollution, don't care about toxic waste, don't care about trees and wildlife and species. And that's probably a failing on the side of the climate skeptics, the side of people like me. I think we could have done, and I could have certainly done a better job. I think whenever you talk to an audience that's not clued into sort of the politics of this, you really do need to begin with everyone wants clean air, clean water. And you should start, and I have this in the book, starting with a success story of our environment. The first Earth Day spurred a lot of awareness, if you will. And what it did, if we go back, and I go back to that first Earth Day, 1970, and show you that air and water has been radically improved. At the same time, we have radical, huge jumps in population, economic growth. And this continued even through Trump's energy boom of, you know, when we had the, for the first time since Harry S. Truman was president, 1952, during Donald Trump's administration, America had more energy exports than imports. But guess what? Not only were we reducing carbon dioxide better than anyone else signed in the UN Paris Agreement, better than anyone else in the world, but we also were continuing to reduce traditional air pollutants. So I go through the book and I show you just the air pollution success story. And I even quote the liberal mainstream media, Axios, who just had an article 2 weeks ago about the degrowth plan recession movement. But they actually say the problem of air pollution has been largely solved. And now, you know, that's why climate is a much harder sell, because it's amazing. So I would say that's where we failed to tell them about our success story about clean air, clean water, and wealth and free markets equal a cleaner environment. It's where you get to central planning, socialism, and poor nations that have the problem. So everyone should want to get wealthy as possible with free markets. You're going to have the happiest, healthy environment.
Well, I grew up in Detroit, Mark, and I was inundated as a kid with stories of how the acid rain that our auto industry caused was destroying all vegetative life north of the border. Also, if that wasn't going to kill us first, it was going to be the depletion of the ozone layer from my mom's Aquanet.
Yeah.
What happened to those?
Well, you know, what happened was in that short term on ozone, they got what they wanted, the Montreal Protocol, and that was a big lobbying effort by DuPont, which benefited greatly. Once they get a major legislative achievement on some of those, which were, again, much smaller than the climate issue, they sort of moved on. And then a lot of them were disproven. Ozone hole, they still don't know. It opens and closes regardless of what mankind does on that. And we don't even know the impact. We don't know why it opens, why it closes. But I think what happened was basically climate just took over for all those smaller regional issues that you're describing. I remember acid rain very well. And
it's going to ruin cars, everything.
Yeah, and there's also more. Our apples. I cut my teeth on the Amazon rainforest scare. I remember watching the old National Geographic, you know, for rainforest losing at, you know, five acres a minute, and you know, show the jungle being cut down. It got so bad. I found out that I had been duped. I went down to Brazil several times. I did a documentary on that in 2000. And exposed the Sting Rainforest Foundation. It was the least endangered forest, nearly 90% intact. It was regenerating. They were double accounting. New York Times admits it a few years later. They had an article, for every acre of rainforest cut, 50 are regenerating. And the reason now you're not hearing that much. You hear about it now because Bolsonaro in Brazil is hated. He's the Brazilian Trump, so they try to come after. But essentially, people are leaving the jungles and the swamps and the wetlands, and they're moving to urban areas and suburban. So no one wants to live in clear-cut jungle. Clear-cutting jungles is what poor nations do. People without options, they're living a subsistence living, high infant mortality, short life expectancy. Guess what? Once you get out of that, you clean up your environment. You're not living in huts made of dung. You're not breathing in that horrible air. You're not throwing sewage into your local river. So development, technology, freedom, free markets. That's the message in my book. And I show you the examples where United States is the shining city on the hill when it comes to the environment. As horrific as that sounds to climate activists, it's true.
It really is. Let me ask you this, Mark. How much of what the environmental movement does and the opportunists with the Green New Deal and people like AOC and whatnot take advantage of is just fill a void created by humans' inability, especially if they are in the sciences, humans' inability to just simply say, we don't know. You know, we don't know what caused the medieval warm period. We don't know what caused the tiny ice age. We have no idea. There are no SUVs on the planet when either one of those events happened. But we can't admit, and so many people's jobs are based on them never admitting, that they simply don't yet have an answer and may never have an answer. So they fill that void the same way people look at the Zapruder film and say, well, back and to the left. There had to be somebody up there on the grassy knoll.
Well, and that's it. You're exactly on point, because what ends up happening is once politics and solutions get in the way, then suddenly all the science conforms to it. I have a great quote. Here's a quote from Thomas Sowell. Experts are often called in not to provide factual information or dispassionate analysis for the purpose of decision-making by responsible officials, but to give political cover for decisions already made and based on other considerations entirely. Now, that applies directly to the United Nations Climate Panel. This was a panel where they decided to come together to look at how CO2 affects the climate. 1988, they're formed. They have no incentive to ever say CO2 is not causing a problem, because if they do, they would be disbanded. And if they're disbanded, they're not going to annual conferences in Cancun and Bali and South America and Europe and staying at luxury resorts. That's number one. Number two, if they fail to say it's a problem, not only do they not get to hype the problem, but they don't get to be in charge of the solution through things like the UN Paris Pact. So what ends up happening is scientists become lobbyists for the political cause. And that's why you're never going to hear these connected scientists ever say, I don't know, because the answer is we know and we need these policies to solve it. We have NASA's current lead global warming scientist who's come out supporting carbon taxes. The previous one has been arrested half a dozen times protesting global warming. His name was James Hansen. This is NASA's lead global warming scientist. He endorsed a book that called for ridding the world of industrial civilization and blowing up dams and raising cities so we could turn off the greenhouse gas machine. These are the people in charge. So they're driven by ideology, and they're driven by a connection to politics and lobbying. And that is why you will never hear them say, I don't know.
Oh, right. It's job security. If you wanted a government grant to study the mating habits of squirrels, you're probably not going to get a government grant to cover the mating habits of squirrels. But if you said, as pertains to climate change, suddenly your chances increase dramatically. Mark, while I've got you, as we wrap it up, I've interviewed you a few times in the past, and you put this better than anybody in any way that I can. So just for those of you who haven't heard it before, explain where the 97% of scientists agree that climate change is happening and is man-made comes from, because it's still a crutch. It is the crutch that the left falls back on every time they talk about this issue. Because what are you, a science denier? It comes from this because of all these brilliant scientists who stood unequivocally, like the defiant girl, like that guy in Tiananmen Square against the tank, against capitalism, to say, this is real, this is happening, and it's your fault.
Well, thank you. Yes. In fact, I was at a congressional hearing, and I was asked about this 97%. Well, I was sitting next to the former head of the United Nations climate chief, and I actually put his picture in the book. He's like having a cow sitting beside me. He can't handle this. But here's the gist. I actually address this in Green Fraud. I have a whole section. The 97% consensus was an invented talking point so that climate activists, politicians who support climate solutions, Green New Deal, UN Paris, don't need to know an ounce of the science. All they need to know is that all scientists agree. Al Gore recently on CNN, by the way, upped it to 99%, just made up the number. 99% of all scientists agree. And what it does is it makes you not have to think, know a darn thing about science, and it also intimidates anyone who challenges you. Are you a scientist? How do you know? I feature in the book a United Nations lead author, Dr. Richard Toll, one of the most cited climate scientists, climate experts in the world. And he actually says it was pulled from thin air, the 97%. In other words, the study that they claim it was based on, it was not, had none of the figures in the study, none of the stats in it back up that number. It was just a created talking point. And there were other 97%. Another one was a 10,000 survey plus of scientists, which they whittled down to 77 anonymous scientists. We don't know their names or affiliations, but apparently they asked a couple questions, and 75 of the 77 came out with the right answers to form the 97% consensus. I mean, this is the nonsense. And then even among that 77 anonymous scientists, skeptical scientists have said they probably would have answered the questions. Things like, as the earth warmed and do humans contribute? Suddenly you're then part of the 97% consensus, which means you have to support, you know, the Green New Deal. It means you think there's a climate emergency. So it is a cheap talking point, but it has been highly effective.
Oh, very. And now you can't, if you are skeptical at all, you are not, you're not in the field. You won't get a job. You won't get, or you have to keep it to yourself and hope to God nobody ever develops a mind reading machine, because you will be out. On just like if you don't subscribe to critical race theory and you want to be a university professor, look out. It's not going to happen.
Well, actually, well, as I say, look, Scott Pruitt, Trump's first EPA, he was the only administrator, only official in the Trump administration willing to challenge the United Nations scientific claims. He was run out of Washington after 1 year. His wife asked for help doing a Chick-fil-A. He got a bed and breakfast below market value. I mean, absurd stuff. His own staff turned against him. Yeah, career staff, the bureaucratic permanent staff. And he was forced out. He was the only Trump administration official willing to challenge that science. I mean, again, all the other ones did great policy, but they never wanted to challenge the narrative. So that's the bottom line, and I think you saw it there. I mean, you're persona non grata if you're labeled a climate science denier in the corporate world and the government world currently.
Amen. But Mark Morano, thank God you're out there. The book Green Fraud: Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. It's even worse than we've said here. It's a great book. Great. Here's my copy. They also sent me a digital copy. It's out now. Amazon for now. Other places until who knows, until Antifa shows up and burns the place down. Mark, congratulations on the book. ClimateDepot.com is the website. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Derek. Appreciate it.
That is all the time we have for today. Thanks to Mark Morano for coming on the program. The book, Green Fraud: How the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Mark Morano. Check it out. Pick it up. Check out his documentaries. I'm going to have to go watch that Michael Moore documentary that's got the left all up in arms. Anyway, have a great weekend. I just watched Joe Biden's press conference. It was like I expected visiting angels to come out and take him off the stage at some point. Somebody should report elder abuse. I'll talk about that on the Curse Show tomorrow at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast and on the show on Monday, either way. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope to see you tomorrow. Have a great one. Bye.